1510 WMEX Quincy, Boston, and 101.1 FM W266DQ Weymouth. WMEX Quincy, Boston. Streaming at WMEXBoston.com. And on your smart speaker, just say play WMEX. The greatest hits of all time are back. This is the all-new WMEX.
WMEX Boston.
They singing all night, drinking wine, spooty, ooty, drinking wine, spooty, ooty, drinking wine.
That's right. It is 6 o'clock on a Friday night on 1510 WMEX, which means it's time for Wine by Design with Len Prasuti, your host, a wine educator with over 30 years' experience in the field, and there's no wine that he doesn't know. 781-834-9639. Here's your host, Len Prasuti.
Well, thank you, Ben, and welcome everyone to Wine by Design. Just wanted to mention, in addition to calling in your questions to WMEX at 781-834-9639, you can email me at lenwmex@gmail.com or lenwmex@gmail.com. That's been working out really well. I actually did a 2:30 spot with Uncle Tony today, where I was mentioning the 2020 Regaliali Nero d'Avola. Now, when you throw the accent in, that's a little tough to decipher, especially if you're driving the car. But Lou D emailed me from his phone while he was driving, and I was able to get back to him before the show tonight. Lou, I hope I gave you time to buy the wine. Sorry about that if I didn't. Just wanted to mention that you can also listen to past episodes at WMEXBoston.com, or you can search Wine by Design on your favorite platform. Well, have to start tonight. You know, Sunday, St. Patrick's Day. It's the day everyone's Irish. And the big question, what works with a corned beef and cabbage dinner? Now, I would never tell someone not to drink Guinness. I know that's kind of traditional. But, you know, you're going to a dinner where you know it's going to be served and somebody asks you to bring some wine. So I have a couple suggestions for you. There's some saltiness there and there's some elements that are a little tricky to match with wines, not the least of which is it tends to be served with either kind of a horseradish cream or kind of a grainy whole grain mustard kind of thing, that coarse mustard that they serve with it. But the two wines that actually work really well with a dish and those little things that you put on it are, first of all, for the red, a young fruity Beaujolais. The Jetto comes to mind. Sells for around $10. Really nice, juicy berry quality to it. You do want to serve it slightly chilled, and it works really well with a corned beef and cabbage dinner. The other wine, in terms of white, that I've tried that really kind of nails the match is a Feinherb or a Halbtrocken German Riesling. Now, both the Feinherb and Halbtrocken are German terms for half dry. They tend to be substantially drier than, say, a Cabernet or even certainly more than a Spätlese. And I kind of like that little touch of fruitiness with a really great acidity at the lower alcohol level. It really cleanses the palate really well. You can do a Cabernet, a German Cabernet Riesling. But the thing with that is they tend to be a bit sweeter. And sometimes that sweetness can overwhelm the food a little bit. But those are my two suggestions for things that actually work quite well at that table. Had a couple experiences over this past week that I thought I'd share with you. One was kind of surprising. Over my wine drinking life, I've tended to just, you know, I kind of like this wine. Let me buy an extra bottle of it and throw it in the cellar. without a lot of thought or anything like that. And I go through the cellar from time to time, and I come across these things that I had no idea that I had. This past week, I came up with a 2008 Pinot Noir from Victoria, Australia. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with that region of Australia, it's fairly cool. And they do a great job with Pinot Noir there. Actually, they do a really great job with Sangiovese, too. The most Chianti-like Sangiovese I've ever had outside of Chianti, believe it or not, was from Victoria, Australia. It was a family that made wine in Chianti that moved there and was just doing an amazing job. But this was the Permutations Pinot Noir by a little winery called R Wines, not very well known. It was in the kind of like the $12, $13 range, I think, when I bought it. But one of the cool things about it was it's 16 years old. It was absolutely perfectly resolved. And you get this touch of this kind of ethereal, earthy cherry, along with a touch of the bright, fresh cherry fruit and some of the dead leaf and beetroot and spices that go along with the older wine. But it was just right there. And that's what kind of made it noteworthy for me, a 16-year-old Pinot Noir. But the big reason I'm mentioning it right now is the fact that it was closed with a screw cap, what we often refer to as the Stelvin closure. That works great for aging wines. I know I did a major part of an episode on that, saying how if I have a choice, I always go with a screw cap because it's much more predictable. And the wines can age absolutely beautifully under that Stelvin closure. And I'm here to tell you, I just had one that was beautiful. And again, not the very best older Pinot I've ever had, but one of the absolutely most perfectly resolved. So everything that needed to happen during the aging process happened. The other kind of surprise that I had that was a very pleasant surprise was I took home a wine. I go to a local wine shop here. Tom, the wine person, has a great palate, and he's always picking up new things. And he picked up a wine that I've had in the past. I actually visited South Africa in the area where it's made. It's the Mann Family Wines, and it's the Pinotage, which is a clone of Pinot Noir and Sansot, where they get them crossing and get the best elements of both grapes in this new grape, this new cross that they call Pinotage. Now, at one time, Pinotages were, my God, almost the joke of the wine world. I remember I did a wine dinner after having just come back from South Africa, and there's 75 people at the dinner. I asked who liked the wine. I served the Pinotage first, and then I did it with a salmon dish that brought a lot of people over. But I remember one brave soul out of 75 raised his hand saying he liked it. Now they know how to handle it in terms of canopy management and all that. This was beautiful, really kind of a supple, easy drinking red, had a touch of mocha, plum, maybe a hint of coffee bean, but some really nice spice, these notes of sage and ginger. And I tried it with this really interesting dish that is now one of our favorite dishes on earth at the Prasuti household. It's called Murg Makhani. It's an Indian butter chicken. Now, really complex. It's got garlic, ginger, garam masala, serrano chilies, which are pretty hot, three times that of the jalapeno, a touch of cream and everything. And it was a drop-dead perfect match with that. One of the beautiful things is, though, however, I paid $10 and change for the bottle. Just one of those other instances, and by the way, it was the 2021 Mann Family Pinotage, that you don't have to spend a lot of money. Boy, if you just hit that wine and food combination just right, it can provide a ton of pleasure. Well, now I actually wanted to go to a listener question. Ken emailed in, and he kind of mentioned the popularity of Sicilian wines being fueled by TV shows like The White Lotus, which I understand is really good. It's about a resort, takes place in Italy. I haven't seen it. But he was looking for advice for food pairings on three Regaliali wines that he routinely drinks. Their Grillo, their Nero d'Avola, and for special occasions, their Cabernet Sauvignon, which many people consider the best Cabernet of all of Sicily. Great question, Ken, and not even just because of those wines, which I bought a couple of them and tried them with a couple of dishes, was great. But it speaks to the whole Regaliali phenomenon and the Tasca della Merita family that brought it to world prominence. You know, the whole thing of Sicilian wine becoming trendy has gone on for about 20 years now. They've maintained really high visibility ever since, but they were one of the epicenters of this whole natural wine movement. And they also are a great source of wines that are new to most of the world, some indigenous varietals that can be fun and easy to drink and very, very inexpensive. So they have been visible on a global scale for a long time, but people often don't remember. It wasn't that long ago that no one ever heard of Sicilian wines. In the 1960s, now I know that's a ways back, but there were pretty much only two of them. It was Corvo and Regaliali. Now, Corvo was first, but they didn't even let you know the wine was from Sicily on the label. It took Regaliali to really prominently say, hey, we're from Sicily, we're making really good wine here. It's a fascinating story in that the site of Regaliali was established by the Arabs in the 11th century. By the way, the history of wine in Sicily goes way back, 3,000 years or so. But they called it Regaliali, which meant the farm of Ali. The modern winery that makes the wine that we know and love was founded in 1830. So that's been around for a long time. But it's been owned since the 60s by the Tasca della Merita family that was started by Giuseppe. And then during the 1980s and 1990s, his son Lucio took over and really put Regaliali on the world stage. He just died a couple of years ago, lived a long, really productive life. But he was a major innovator for wine in general and for the wines of Sicily. He really thought globally from the beginning. When he was 20, he actually competed on the Italian equestrian team and was in the 1960 Olympics. But he, being exposed to other forces in the wine world throughout Europe, he became interested in European varietals, which, quite frankly, were unheard of in Sicily at the time. And in 1979, he persuaded his father, Giuseppe, to plant Cabernet and Chardonnay. That was a big deal back then, because no one had even thought of attempting that in Sicily. They released their first bottling about 10 years later. And, well, especially the Cabernet became famous worldwide and definitely was for many generations the best Cabernet Sauvignon of all of Italy. It is interesting, he was involved in the tech world, and he was also the first one in 1998, one of the first in the absolute entire world to introduce software to fine-tune the winemaking process and to get computers involved there to really make sure you get it exactly right. But he started to get notoriety by these international varieties, Cabernet and Chardonnay. But at the same time, he was always, right from the very beginning, really passionate about promoting native grape varieties. They actually have almost 1,000 acres planted to 55 different indigenous grape varieties. They have almost twice that in holdings, but he got on that boat really early on of promoting the wines of Sicily, and again, the wines that were indigenous to Sicily. He did this flagship red, the Rosso del Conte, which was a Nero d'Avola and Perricone blend, and it was one of the finest and most legendary examples of Sicilian wine from the beginning to this day. Super quality, great longevity. They actually held a vertical tasting going back to the first vintage of that wine, which was 1979. And that wine got an outstanding rating from the decanter panel that was at that tasting and rating the wines. But enough about the family. Again, single-handedly brought the wines of Sicily to a global stage. Now we get into the wines themselves. And boy, were they eye-openers. I had had them in the past, but I hadn't had them for a long time. So first, the Grillo, which is a white wine grape that, along with Cattarato, they used in making Marsala. And lately, they've been making a dry white wine from it. It's somewhat similar to Pinot Grigio in it's relatively light in alcohol and just kind of very fresh, very easy to drink. Typically not a lot of money. This one, the 2022 Regaliali bottling, and by the way they call it Cavallo della Fate, which has to do with the fact that Grillo means cricket in Italian, and that term has to do with a legend that crickets serve as fairy horses and bring good luck to newlyweds. So this would be a wine to bring to newlyweds. But anyway, one of the most outstanding examples of Grillo I have ever had. Very complex, really beautiful, crisp pear, kind of a dried peach, along with a peach pit, which kind of gives you that mineral quality, makes it a little more complex. A slight almond hint there, which I often get in Italian whites, which just draws me to them, and some really interesting light spices, maybe some anise and ginger. But the big thing here is the texture. It's really kind of rich and round on the palate, almost like a little touch of honey butter there, really luscious, but it was just so beautifully balanced by this Granny Smith apple acidity. They just kept it super fresh and lively and vibrant. The wine's absolutely delicious. And I was so taken by it that I did some research on the production methods of it. Turns out that this wasn't by chance, this complexity for the Grillo. They harvest a good portion of the grapes very early, before kind of full phenolic ripeness, so they maintain that natural acidity in minerality from the earlier harvested grapes. And then they wait a while for the rest of the grapes to fully ripen. And then they harvest those, which gives you the richness and that kind of structure in the body. They put it on lees from stainless steel for 4 months. And man, did it work. I was very, very impressed with that wine. They went to great lengths to get it exactly right. Back to Ken's question about the food, my first choice would be with pan-seared scallops with a citrus beurre blanc. But we actually tried it with a chicken cordon bleu. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, chicken cordon bleu, why don't you get something that I make all the time? I'm here to tell you that there are some stores that pre-make them for you. You just bring them home, put them in the oven. McKinnon's on the North Shore makes an excellent one. So we tried it with that. It was an excellent match. We did a pasta carbonara with it, and it was okay with it. But it is interesting. You know, we always have a bunch of wines around, and we're going back and forth tasting from one wine to the next. when that wine, the Grillo, came up to around the 57, 58 degrees Fahrenheit range, it actually went pretty well with the Carbonara. But when it was cooler, it was an actively not so great match. The other relatively inexpensive, as I mentioned, the Grillo was $20, was the 2020 Regaliali Nero d'Avola. What a lovely version of Nero d'Avola. Nero d'Avola has been described by some people as the red Pinot Grigio in that it can make a really easy drinking, approachable red. But when vinified differently and letting the grapes get a little more ripe with lower yields can make a really long-lived red as well. This one was kind of the former. It's really had this juicy, earthy cherry, a little dusty rose hint, notes of sage. But I got this really interesting meaty quality, like cooked meat, fruit in the palate. And by meaty, I mean like it's actually kind of the flavors when you cook meat. It's very, very similar to that. And I came up with an amazing match for this that was superb in the top highest percentile of food and wine matches for us. It was a porterhouse steak that we used a coffee rub on that had a bunch of different little things in it, some brown sugar in that, but really thick. We did them over a live hickory wood fire, which gave it this beautiful hint of smoke. And as soon as they came off, we put big pats of butter on it, which formed this beautiful butter sauce when mixing with the rub. And that, with the Regaliali Nero d'Avola 2020, was incredible. It is interesting, the wine being a juicy red. Juicy reds are great with food. And it actually went better with the pasta carbonara that we had than the Grillo did, which, you know, you think pasta carbonara, probably white with the cream in it and everything like that, and was also equally as excellent with the Cordon Bleu, which now brings us to the last wine of the trio, which is their Cabernet. Again, this is more of a special occasion wine. It's arguably the top, if not one of the top, wines of Sicily. It's the Regaliali Vigna San Francesco 2017, which is the current release. Now, that wine is very highly regarded. The Wine Spectator, it's also about $60, so it's not inexpensive, but you're getting what you pay for there. They love the wine and mention flavors of black currant, fig cake, herb de Provence, supple tannins, but with accents of star anise, and they're talking about a mandarin orange peel kind of emerging to play on the finish, as they put it. That led me to believe, now, that level of a Cabernet works with a lot of things. I mean, you can do a rack of lamb, a prime rib, but the dish that I think would really show it off to its best effect is my wife, Andrea, has come up with this braised beef short rib recipe where we brine the beef short ribs in juniper berries and gin, among other things. And then we brown them over a live fire and braise them in Zinfandel, a wine. And that is the one that I think, because of that kind of juniper berry nuance that you get in the actual short ribs itself, would play beautifully off those elements in the wine. So again, thank you for that question, Ken. Just did want to try to finish up on Argentina a little bit here. We've been talking about it. We discussed pretty much everything going on there with the major grapes, why it's such a beautiful place to make wine, the altitude, the dryness, and all that. And I'm not going to go over all those again. Just wanted to mention that in addition to Malbec, they have a lot of different grapes from France, Italy, and Spain. They do Bernarda, Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, Tempranillo, Corvina, the grape of Valpolicella, Cabernet Franc and Petit Verdot, and Pinot Noir, which is becoming very big in the South area where it's quite cool. The other whites that they do are Chardonnay, Muscat d'Alexandria, you know, the Moscato grape, Sauvignon Blanc, they do some Chenin Blanc and some Semillon. Just a quick rundown of the regions. Mendoza is the big region. Over 70% of the production takes place there. Luan de Cuyo is one of the sub areas that's really doing a great job, and some of the big names there, the famous ones. But the Uco Valley, where it's cooler, is now leading the quality movement there. Really great. Far to the north is Salta, where they have these very, very high vineyards, some over 11,000 feet, some of the absolute highest vineyards in the world, where Torrontes does incredibly well, along with the Malbec. But what I would like to do is give you a few wines to try that are in a reasonable price range that'll give you kind of that full-blown Argentina experience. Now, the one I talked about before that I was so blown away by and impressed with, I'll mention it again, was the 2022 Bodega Colome, C-O-L-O-M-E, Torrontes. The beauty of that is it's coming from the best area, the Salta area, which is in Calchaquí Valley, far north there, where it's very high elevation and is quite cool. It's well over 5,500 feet where they're growing grapes for this wine. That is a textbook Torrontes. The Wine Spectator gave it one of the highest ratings they've ever given a Torrontes, talking about geranium, peach, Meyer lemon, candied orange peel, juicy peach notes. The one thing I did want to add to that is that, as I've mentioned before, Torrontes is a very difficult grape. And if you harvest it too late, it can become real alcoholic and kind of have this pungent, bitter fruit quality. Well, this one has just the lightest hint of that bitterness that just makes the wine spectacular. This is arguably, the way this wine is showing right now, the finest example of Torrontes I have ever had. And here's the best part, $12. How often can you spend $12 and get one of the very best examples that exists of a wine? So now on to Malbec. There are a ton that I could go to, but Malbecs tend to be either of that kind of lighter, more approachable style, or these big, super age-worthy styles. My favorite for going years and years and years has been the Finca de Cerro. The 2019 is the current vintage of that. Got a 92 rating from the Wine Spectator. One of the reasons I love it, though, is the fact that it has a lot of depth and complexity. As I mentioned, the Wine Spectator, 92 points, saying it's plenty of verve with acidity and firm tannins, structural to the floral core of dark plum cherry flavors, which meld with concentrated mineral and spice notes, and it ends with notes of dark chocolate. It's really giving you the full-blown Malbec from Argentina experience at a very reasonable price, around $21. The Cabernet from that same vineyard site, the Remolinos Vineyard, 92 Spectator 2, phenomenal value as well. But the last wine that I wanted to mention is from south in Patagonia. It's an area that's really just being explored now and is known for cool weather varieties. They're really doing a lot with Pinot Noir, but they're doing some Gewurz and other items there. There's a 2021 Kloskill Pinot Noir from Patagonia that is just stunning. It's, you know, notes of cherry, wild strawberry, some pomegranate, a little more like a French red Burgundy than anything else, but it's still got enough ripe fruit to give you that new world quality. it really does have super silky tannins, really easy to drink right now and quite complex. And that one is in the mid-teen range. So that's a great, great value. Well, that's about it for tonight's show. You've been listening to Wine by Design with Blend on 1510. If you like the show, please tell your wine-loving friends about it. We'd have to love to expand our audience here. Thanks for listening. Till next week, all the best in wine and life.